Good afternoon and welcome to Have a Care, the show that spotlights humans acting for humanity. I am your host, Danielle Padilla, and today we have a very special guest, one of the board directors from the Mona Foundation, Seema Mobini. Thank you for coming today.
Thank you for having me.
Perfect. Now, before we get any further into the segment, Seema, would you mind telling our listeners a little bit about what the Mona Foundation is?
For sure. Mona Foundation is a nonprofit organization that was founded in the United States in 1998. And the mission of Mona Foundation is support grassroots educational initiatives around the world with an emphasis on education of girls.
Perfect. Thank you so much. And first off, before we delve further into our segment, I think our listeners would like to really know how you became a part of the Mona Foundation.
I have been involved with the Mona Foundation for about 15 years. When my youngest child was about 5 years old. And I just came upon it when someone gave a talk about it. And my father had passed away recently. Mm. And I just wanted to do something in his honor. And this was what got me interested. And then when I heard more about the philosophy behind Mona Foundation, I really became passionate, and I started traveling to most of the projects, learned more about them, saw them working, you know, like up close, and that was it. I'm just set for life, mm-hmm. kind of.
Perfect. Thank you for sharing such a beautiful story. Now, in your opinion, what makes the Mona Foundation different from other nonprofits?
Yes, that's such a good question. As I said, the reason I got interested was the way they look at development of the world. Mm-hmm. And, you know, when you look at how probably from the beginning of 20th century, so many well-meaning and pure-intentioned people have started nonprofit organizations, have tried to educate people all over the world, you sometimes wonder, why is our world still in such a mess? You know, why is there such an imbalance in the way our resources, our wealth, education is spread around the world? And one of the things I like to share with you to prove that point is some statistics that right now 10.7% of the people in the world, which equates to 767 million people, live in extreme poverty.
Wow.
On $1.90 per day. About 50%, or 3 billion people, live in poverty, which is $2.50 a day. And about 80% of people mm-hmm. in the world, or 4.8 billion, live in poverty on $10 a day. And this is 2013 statistics from the World Bank. And you're wondering, you know, our planet has so many resources, and, you know, so there are some factors that are used in the philosophy that Mona Foundation operates that I think can help us revisit the way we look at development. And if it's okay with you, I like to go through them.
Of course, please elaborate.
Yes, so one of the factors is that throughout all these efforts to educate, to bring wealth to masses around the world, one of the factors is that throughout history, Western countries, or more, you can say more developed countries, they have imported technology and money and expertise into other parts of the world with the good intentions of educating, bringing wealth. However, experience has proved that exporting our ways to other countries and in some instances trying to change the way people live their lives according to our standards does not necessarily work and is not sustainable. Mm-hmm. By that I mean, you know, when foreign people bring their ways, their technology, their wealth to another country, because the support of the grassroots is not there, and sometimes they're trying to change their ways, and at the end, the foreigners leave, these projects just fizzle out. So this has been proven in the past 100 and some years, that many projects that started by foreigners, they're not sustainable. So the philosophy that Mona Foundation follows is based on the belief that human beings, regardless of their background, their nationality, their ethnicity, their race, their religion, they have the capacity to develop themselves and their communities. So that is why we support and partner with grassroots educational initiatives.
Perfect. So you keep it on the local level with these communities, correct?
Yes, yes. So we don't go and start a project in another country. So we find projects that have been initiated by the locals, that have the support of the locals. And of course, there is a very strong sense of accounting and, you know, keeping, you know, things in balance. But we don't tell them, oh, I know better. So this was the mentality that, oh, because my country is developed, I know better. You know, I'm more knowledgeable. You don't know anything. Let me teach you. Come and, you know, I have traveled to locations where people say, yeah, people came and they wanted to start schools for us, but they told us to change the way we dress.
Oh,
you know, like they had these, and this is in an indigenous part of Panama that I've traveled to. The women wear these beautiful handmade dresses, and they said, yeah, they came and told us to change our clothes. Why should we do that? What has that got to do with education? So that is one of the factors. You know, this belief in the innate capacity of all human beings to develop themselves and their communities. Second factor is the importance of education of girls and women, which, of course, this has kind of become universally known, that if you educate a girl, you can transform the community, you know. And of course, there are still many parts of the world where women are discriminated against. I mean, it's very difficult for people to believe that in a country like United States, but, you know, there are like problems of early marriage, about like problems of abuse and not allowing girls to get educated because they can become dangerous if, you know, these kinds of mentalities are still prevalent around the world. So it is not only the education of girls that is important, but also education of families and boys and men to understand that with education of girls, their communities can be transformed. So we don't suffice to just educating girls, but educating the community. So many of the projects we support are of that caliber. And then finally, The third factor, which is very important, and I really hope that the young people in the United States can pay attention to that, is that academic education, while it is great, it's not enough. If you think of it, the prevalent mentality of young people in the United States and pretty much around the world, when they graduate from high school or college, is I want to get rich, I want to become famous so that I can just have anything that I want. There's nothing wrong with that. It's wonderful, you know, get educated, make money. But what is missing is something more. It's what I call a character education or moral education that teaches you not only to work to progress yourself, but to think of your work as service to the rest of the community and to the rest of humanity. That basically, so we want to grow kids who become agents of positive change in their communities. Not just, okay, I'm gonna, you know, do all of this, become rich, and who cares about the rest of the world? So that element, I think, is something that is missing in many of our education systems. And pretty much all the projects that we support have that element in them. And I, if we have time, I can even talk about some examples.
Please, and thank you, actually. Yeah. Explain a little bit how that education.
Yes. So, you know, as an example, I mean, there are, I can bring examples from all the projects that I have visited and how they are creating this mentality of becoming agents of positive change. But one of the great examples that I love is a project we partner with in India, in a very small city called Indore. This project is called Barley Institute for Development of Rural Women. And barley in the local language of the people there means the column in the center of the house that keeps the house erect, helps it stand up. And that is a symbol of what a woman can be. So the girls who come to this project, which is kind of like a boarding school, they're usually teenagers. They come from the lowest of the low castes in the tribal areas of India, meaning that, you know about the caste system, and, you know, the lowest of the low, which are the women also, most of them are illiterate. They come to this place and they first become literate. They learn some kind of occupation so that they can go back to their tribes and become a breadwinner for their families. And also they get this kind of character, moral education to become agents of positive change in their communities. So they go and, you know, just imagine in a place where a woman is nothing and all they can think of is, look, oh, I just want to get rid of you when you're 12 to get you married off. She comes back from this project after just 6 months or a year and to a year, and she starts becoming this agent. She becomes a mover and shaker in her community. So, and there are many examples of girls who have done that. So that is just one of the examples, and there are many more. So
okay, perfect. Thank you for that answer. Sure. So one of my next questions is regarding Mona's future. Do you hope to grow the foundation, or is there a reason your foundation stays small?
So, of course, we do want to grow. But again, another philosophy that may be interesting is that anything that grows very fast also usually is not sustainable. So we have intentionally stayed small. We support 12 projects in 8 countries in the world, and one of them is, we have 2 projects in the United States. And the reason we do that is that, again, going back to that concept of, you know, foreigners bringing things into another country, many nonprofits, they just give money and they leave. So the concept Mona supports is that we stay with these partners for long term, and we see the development of the project, the people in it. And, you know, so we basically stay long term with most of the projects.
Perfect. Thank you. And just a quick question. How do you develop these local contacts within the countries you visit? Do people approach you, or do you go out and seek them?
Generally, people seek us. And of course, many times we are referred to projects by people we know. You know, once you start working in the nonprofit industry, you build a network. And we have that network. And of course, we do not support just any project that comes to us. Our first step is to go and visit the project. And, you know, there's certain criteria that they have to meet before we accept to support them. And then every couple of years, we also travel to the projects and visit them. So
perfect. And tagging on, like, off of that, if you visit a country that has extreme social issues or views, like you said earlier about the caste system, how do you go about changing that system but not ruining the culture that's attached to that?
That is such a great question, because, you know, and of course I'm not a philosopher, but there is this idea of relativism that a lot of people talk about, that, you know, there are certain things that are absolutely wrong, right? So you can't be blind to those things. For example, the abuses toward women. There are certain universally accepted values that we don't close our eyes to. For example, the issue of, you know, women getting abused, or any racism, or, you know, anything that values a human being less than another human being. And of course, again, as I mentioned, we do not go and change people's ways because we are foreigners. It is the grassroots, the people who have initiated these projects, they're the ones that who are changing these ways. And like, as another example, like Barley was one example. There is another project we partner with in India, which is also focused on girls' empowerment. And they actually, it's called Digital Study Hall or Study Hall Foundation. And the founder is a woman, an Indian woman, who came from a middle-class family. But interestingly enough, she always gives her story to us that even though she was smarter and she was a great student, she was smarter than her brothers. When she got 18, her husband said, "No, you're not going to college. Your brothers are going to college. You're getting married." And this woman, she, after she got married and had 2 kids, she went to college. She got her PhD in education from UC Berkeley. I mean, yeah, talking about strong women. And she started this project, and they actually empower girls by telling them about their rights and educating them about their rights, and also empowering the families about, educating the families about girls' rights. So we don't change anything. The people in the field actually make the changes.
Thank you. That's an amazing answer. Now, I see we're running out of time, but one last thing I wanted to ask, how can listeners get involved, and how will the Mona Foundation benefit from listeners' involvement?
What I can suggest, the first thing is you can go and visit our website. It's www.monafoundation.org, one word. Go and read about these projects. There are many great stories of progress, great videos of kids, women who have been educated in these projects. And if anyone has a question, if you want to get involved, you can email me. My email address is Seema, S like Sam, I-M-A, at monafoundation.org. And I will be happy to answer any questions or get you involved.
Perfect. And the involvement, was there any hands-on ways, like events or...
We do have events. Naturally, we raise funds for these projects.
Of course.
Anyone, like you told me, you're a public relations major. we would love to get college students who have any expertise to help us introduce Mona in different capacities and, get more people to know about Mona Foundation.
Perfect. So, tagging off that, are there any internships available to listeners or anyone with any experience in a media platform, whether it be social media, whether it be print or anything like that?
We usually hire interns because the hub of Mona Foundation is in Seattle. So a lot of interns are from University of Washington. But the best thing is to contact me or Mona Foundation and then find out about different opportunities to help.
Perfect. And that's actually the last of it for my questions. Is there anything else you wanted to add before we wrap it up?
I'm very happy to be here to have this conversation, and I hope that many people have been touched by this.
Perfect. Thank you for that answer. And thank you again to Seema Mobini from the Mona Foundation for visiting us here on Have a Care, the show that spotlights humans acting for humanity. I am Danielle Padilla for KPZRadio.com. Good day, and here's to a better tomorrow.